Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance FIL 240 for spring semester 2026.
Today, the cost of capital. This is definitely a little mathy, and there is a spreadsheet with it for it, but it's a broader spreadsheet that calculates the next topic, which is the weighted average cost of capital. And I'll get into that a little bit today, but there is some math that I'll be writing. Now, I will have a quiz on Monday, and that will be mostly on stock valuation, just to get that down as one of your quizzes, and then you can use that for prep for the final exam, along with everything else. We are coming down on the end of this happy semester, so that's something to look forward to, the end of this fun. But today, just a quick look at the numbers, and the numbers are kind of on this, a little bit on the sour side. It was really grim in the overnights, but it had a recovery right away at the opening bell, but then it started to fall back again. It's nothing spectacular, but the real action is down below here a little bit, but just a mention of what's happening. The markets overseas started out in a very bad situation late last night, which was their morning and afternoon over on the other side of the world. As you can see, the Nikkei was really down at the start, but it started climbing back up. It was still a pretty grim day at 2.7% down, but it was not as bad as it had started out last night. And so, as you can see, the same thing was on the Hang Seng and in Australia too. So the east side of the world was not in a good mood at all, but it got a little bit perkier or happier as the day wore along over there. And then we came over to the Western Europe, and as you can see, it was very choppy. I mean, it was up and down, but it was generally trending upward through the day, which was good news. As you can see, some of the indexes, the CAC 40, the DAX, and the FTSE in London, they all were climbing through the day. But like I said, you can notice that there was choppiness in them for one reason or another. It was a volatile trading session. Now, on our side, it got a little bit nasty. At first, it was up right off at the opening bell, and then it dropped, and then it's rallied a couple hours ago, but then that rally fizzled out, as you can see with the Dow. Right now, it's up only 0.25%, and the S&P 500 is actually already back down. It's already fallen into negative territory at negative 0.20%, and the NASDAQ has also fallen back down too. The prospects, we are in a bear market. This is a bear market, but you are seeing these dead cat bounces some days. Here's where the real concern is. Crude oil and Brent, we're almost about 104, 108 on those. So that hope that there was kind of a lowering of the expectations of an oil shortage last week, but those are now being dashed because the concern is simply that so many oil refineries along the Gulf coast, the Persian Gulf, are just being blown to smithereens, and that's just going to cut off a lot of oil that's coming out, and getting through the Strait of Hormuz is pretty much a very dangerous thing. So we are losing a lot of oil that in the global market. Now, even though we don't get a lot of oil from those places, that does not mean that does not affect the price of oil that we will pay, because oil is a global commodity. So we should start to see gas prices begin to come back up again. They had made it down a little bit last week, but with what's going on right now, there's a lot of concern that it's just going to be a bad situation as far as oil concerns. I don't see it going up to anything like 140 or 150 in the near future, but it'll probably go up maybe to 110, 115, especially if there is the rumored or threatened attack on Karg Island, which is a transit point in the Gulf of Hormuz. So we'll see. Stay tuned for more excitement. What's a little bit on the positive side was that late last week, and it was after our last class last week, 10-year bond, again, that yield on that bond is kind of like a benchmark of all interest rates. It had gotten up. It was running toward 4.5%. But it has gotten lower, and that is good news for the interest rate. However, underneath it, there's some bad news, because what you're seeing is a lot more buying of bonds, safe harbor bonds. And so that drives, as that demand for bonds goes up, price of bonds goes up, which brings the yield down. That's what we're seeing. But of course, the fact that you've got investors buying bonds means that there's a lot of, that's kind of like a flight to quality. There's a lot of investors trying to get to a safe harbor right now. So the good news is that that causes prices of bonds to go up and yields to go down, and that helps interest rates. If you look at the technology sector, it's just not a very perfectly red or perfectly green, but the big technology sector is red right now, which means that, you know, that giant part of the markets is suffering. And interestingly, the industrials are taking a whack too. Our industrial base is not producing as much as it was, and even though we're blocking everything else from coming into the country, our industrial base isn't benefiting from it. It's just slowing down production. And then energy is down a little bit too. I'm not sure why that is, but we have it's kind of setting up for an interesting week. Now, I was looking at the earnings announcements that are coming out this week, and I'm trying to remember some of the ones. I think ConAgra's earnings are coming out this week, so I've done this one before, CAG. So we'll see how they're doing right now. Whoa, okay. So apparently the ConAgra, maybe it already announced its earnings. I'm not sure if it already announced them, but no, can't see an earnings report. So it looks like rumors are that the earnings report is going to be pretty good, but you never know what happens when they actually post their earnings. That could be very bad, and then that would cause the stock price to drop a lot. There were a few others. Can't recall which ones were, but in the technology sector, having a quick look at NVDA. Is that NVIDIA? Nope, I did that wrong. NVDA. Yep, it's taking a whack today. And that's just the technology sector. I wanted to show you one here. SMCI, now this is a couple of days ago. That was Supermicro Computers, Inc. It's a big producer of microchips. It's had a rather embarrassing episode last year. It didn't file one of its SEC reports on time. And that's just like almost unheard of. And so the market, the investors just punished the stock mercilessly for a while. And then it kind of came back. But a few days ago, SMCI had a rather difficult thing happen with its chief executive officer. And so you can see it's still falling. But let me show you the year-to-date right there. See how it collapsed right there? That was the announcement. I believe it was the CEO was arrested on fraud charges. So those kinds of things are just death knells for stocks. That's why they are so careful about the people in most companies they hire, the board hires for those kinds of positions because they don't want that kind of embarrassment because investors just beat the hell out of a stock after something like that happens. And you notice that slight rally that it tried to do after that incident, it fizzled out. It's, there's just not a lot of hope left for that. At one point, the high of that stock in the last, since the beginning of the year, was $33. And now it's down to 21, so it's lost a third of its value. And that's just the consequence of those kinds of scandals that can get catch companies and make them miserable. But let me get on to the lecture today. This is what I'm going to do. I think I will do this right now, is just show you something. I'm going to pull up a spreadsheet. This spreadsheet is actually for a much more detailed problem that comes from what I'm going to show you today. And here is the big spreadsheet. It is in your, no, I don't want your nonsense. Okay, here we go. Okay. This is WAC.xlxs. And it is, I saved this one. This one is the last that I do, pretty much. And you'll see why. It's been over the course of the semester. You may notice that I have been showing you more and more complex worksheets, getting you used to them. They're not bad once you've got the hang of them. And most of you did well on that last one where you had the bonds and all that. For those of you who use Excel, some of you apparently had magic and didn't need to use Excel to get exactly the right answers on the quiz. But we'll talk about that later. But right now, let me get this bigger. This is a beast of a spreadsheet, and it calculates something called the weighted average cost of capital. But in order to do that, you must know the component costs of capital. This spreadsheet goes through and calculates the component costs of capital on its way to calculating the weighted average cost of capital. So right here in this, I am giving you how you can just put numbers in and get the answers out. However, it is a big job to get all those numbers in. This is not a simple problem. Start with this. The component costs of capital. And in a way, these equations aren't hard at all. It's just that there are a number of them. And in some cases, you might not, there might be several different equations to find one of them. And it depends on the problem that you're facing. And I'll try to simplify that to some extent on a quiz and an exam, so there will be only one way you do it. But there are other ways. The first thing first is we break capital down into two big categories, debt and equity. Now, the debt side of this is not all that bad at all. But you have to be a little careful here. The cost of debt, we designate that as R sub D. But the one we want isn't R sub D. It's actually the one we need is after tax cost of debt, which is the before cost tax cost of debt times 1 minus the tax rate. So far, so good. Nothing hard about this. Now, the first way that you would might want to find R sub D, the cost of debt, is just find the stupid coupon on the last bond the company issued. Okay, they've got this bond series out there. 5.2% 2029. Okay, that coupon that's in there, that could be, you could use that for the cost of debt. Just pull it out and just put that in there, take one minus the tax rate, and there you're done. Unfortunately, that's not what you should do. It is done, though, actually. It's actually you done this way, but you shouldn't do it this way. What you should do is get the current required rate of return investors want on the debt. That's a yield to maturity. That's the one you should put in there. But that means that you have to calculate the yield to maturity from the price. Okay, that's not too bad, though. I want you to look at this spreadsheet, and if you look at it carefully, it's actually, you've seen some of this before. Look on the spreadsheet right here, calculate yield. You did this. This is that one, that panel on the right from your bond calculations enhanced. There it is right there. You just put in the price on the 100, the coupon rate, and the term, and there is the cost of debt, the yield to maturity, except that you're going to have to take the tax rate, which is always in this class going to be 21%, 0.21. And up there, there's your cost of debt. In the case of this example I gave you here, the bond is has 7 years left. Its coupon rate is 4.25%, and the price on the 100 is 102.40. And so it pops out. It's not that hard to do. You notice that your first kind of reaction would be to, you could use 4.25% for the cost of debt, the coupon. But look what happens when you take into account the current investor's pricing of the bond and the time of maturity, and also one minus the tax rate, the actual one you would want to use comes out to be a considerably different number at 3.02%. So that's all you have to do, though, to get the cost of debt. If you know the tax rate, you know the coupon and all this stuff that you put into that calculate the yield panel, that one comes out for you. Not that difficult. It's just what you did before. You just have to get the numbers in there from the problem and put them in the right place. Now, here's the next one. The problem here is that equity has several different kinds. There's preferred equity. And then there's common stock equity. But there's a third one I haven't mentioned yet. There's new common stock, which is exactly like regular common stock, but it is now being issued. It's new. The common stock that's already out there, that's old. But the problem is that to have new common stock, the company will have to pay more. It's going to cost it more for new common stock than it does for the existing shareholders. You're one of my old shareholders. I know you. I can treat you like dirt, you know. You're going to be there. But you, madam, you're new. I have to treat you better. I have to pay more to get your attention. You, yeah, you're going to be there. But you, I have to woo you. I have to use professionals called investment bankers to get you, and I have to pay them. So that ups the cost of you as a new shareholder. We can figure that out, though. The first thing is preferred. Let me deal with that. It's easy. You remember the formula for the price of preferred stock? The price of preferred stock now is equal to the dividend over R. It's a level perpetuity. That's all there is to it. Now that R is required rate of return on preferred stock. And the dividend is nothing but, well, the dividend, you just take the par value times the amount stated on the certificate. Suppose I just cross multiply. I multiply that there and the piece of zero there. The price, and that's preferred price. That's all there is to it. So the cost of preferred, R sub pref, is nothing but the dividend over the price right now of the preferred. So FJM 3.8%, 80% cumulative preferred par value $120 per share. Is currently priced at $114 per share. That's how I'd put the problem. That's how I'd give it to you. Well, using that formula, what I do, the dividend is going to be 3.8% times the par value of $120. And if I get that, crank that out on a calculator, I will get 0.038 times the dividend, which the par value 120 is $4.56. $4.56 per share. So all I do for it is, in this case, the cost of capital R sub preferred is equal to $4.56 divided by, what did I say the price was, $114. And here we go. Divided by $114, exactly 4%. So the cost of preferred stock is $4, 4% rather. Watch this. This one is in that spreadsheet too. Over here, the preferred dividend is 3.8. The par value of the preferred is 120. And the price of the preferred is 114. Looky there, see it? The only problem with this one is because it has everything, it's like the everything pizza. It even has horrible things like pineapple in it. But as you can see, that sheet does it. You just have to know where to put the numbers in. This sheet is designed to calculate every one of the component costs of capital and then combine them for the weighted average cost of capital. But everything is in there individually. So as you can see, it's not really, it's just sort of like an ability. That's why I start with simple spreadsheets and I keep building you up so that you get more used to having more data in the spreadsheet, getting to the point where it's like corporate spreadsheets. They're really just a bunch of smaller moving parts, but when you look at it in its entirety, you say, what the heck is going on here? As you can see, this is just doing things that we have done before, putting in numbers and getting answers to spit out. In this one, it takes those answers and it uses them for a further purpose. Okay, so that's all there was to that. That's not bad at all. We've got the cost of debt, after-tax cost of debt. We now have the cost of preferred common stock. Now comes the pain in the ass. New common stock actually isn't bad once you've seen how existing common stock is done. But common stock, this is just existing shareholders, the cost of equity, the cost of, the book uses the term, the cost of retained earnings. That's the same thing I'm using as cost of common stock, the cost of retained earnings. And I'll put that up here, just retained earnings. Like that. There are three different methods to do this. And in more the real world kind of situation, it kind of comes and goes. In some cases, one of these formulas you can't use. In others, probably the best way isn't the way that's being done right now. It's kind of like there's a faddish part to it as well. But let me start this way. Cost of retained earnings, I'll put it that way. And we'll designate that as R sub S for stock, common stock. Here's how it goes. There's a method where you use the constant growth formula. This way would be assuming that the company is relatively old, it has a stable dividend that grows at a constant rate from year to year. If you remember how I did that, I did the price now would be the dividend at period one over R minus G. Now, again, this would be how I would price the stock of a company that had stable growth of the dividends. If I rearrange that a little bit, well, let me expand it somewhat. So that would be D0 times 1 plus G over R sub S minus G. Now, you don't have to write this down if you don't want to, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to say price zero is D, well, let me cross multiply. First things first, R sub S minus G is D0 times 1 plus G over the price. Right now. And so R sub S, the cost of retained earnings, would be D0 times 1 plus G over P0 plus G. That's the formula. And that's the one that's working in the spreadsheet. Taking it out of the math for just a second and showing you, I'm pointing something out here. Notice something about what this says about the cost of common stock for a company. The faster the company is growing, see that G? The faster the company is growing, the higher its cost of equity. Let me say that again. Look at it right there. See that plus G, and then there's another G up there on top in the numerator? Those G's are telling us that a company's cost of its retained earnings increases the faster the company grows. So this, yay, this company is growing at this really big rate. Well, that means that its cost of equity is going up. You turn up the furnace in the room, and yeah, the productivity goes up, but at the same time, you could burn the house down. Another thing, notice also that as you increase the dividend, that also increases the cost of equity. But here's the kicker. Notice how the stock price, its current price, its market price, is actually a suppressor of the cost of equity. There was, I may have mentioned it, there were times when I would talk to the executives in a company I was consulting for, and I'd say the stock price is going down. And they would say, well, why is that a problem? We'll get past that. So what? Why should we care? It's because you are actually causing the cost of your equity capital to go up the more your stock price falls. Essentially, your stockholders become more and more expensive in this way. Now, the higher the stock price, the lower your cost of capital. So that's why companies actually do care, if they understand the math, that's why they do care about their stock price. They don't want their stock price to go down, because when it goes down, that means their cost of equity capital is going up. And I explained this to one, he was mathematically inclined, and I showed him this, and he said, well, you know, why, where is this higher cost of equity? Is it flying around the room? I said, no, it's like a fever. You don't feel it at first, but the worse it gets, that higher that fever gets, the more you begin to notice that it is weighing down the company. It is making you, if you have a higher and higher fever, it's making you less and less energetic. That's what it does over a long period of time. So the lessons from this formula are two. One is growth, yes, absolutely growth, but too much growth is actually going to harm the company. That's why we have this maximum sustainable rate of growth. Companies that grow too fast for too long, essentially almost every time, within a few years to 5 years, they're dead. They die from that. So anyway, that's the formula, however, we will use, because it's straightforward for getting the cost. I'll tell you the other two here in a minute, but let me show you one here. Right here, common stock, retained earnings, is this one right here. So in other words, that would have to do with the dividend and the growth rate of the current dividend and the growth rate of the dividend. Okay, so let's say the common dividend is on some company stock is $2.40. And the growth rate of the dividends is, oh, let's say 1.50% growth rate of dividends. And the current price of the common stock is, let's say, $41.25 a share. There it is right there, 7.41. Again, all you have to do is know where in the sheet to put the right numbers in, and it will do that right there for you. You don't have to sweat it. So your incentive to find where to put the numbers is actually pretty high in this, because if you can just put the numbers from the problem in, Excel will get your answers out. The thing of it is, though, that you couldn't use this calculation for the cost of retained earnings for companies that do not have stable constant growth rate of dividends. That's why there are two other ways to do it. This is method one, getting the R sub S by the constant growth rate model. Method two is stupidly easy, but it's not used very much by companies. Some companies do. All you use is the capital asset pricing model, for heaven's sakes. The expected return investors want for common stock is going to be the risk-free rate plus the beta of the stock times the expected return to the market minus the risk-free rate. That's how it's so simple. It's kind of a wonder why companies don't use this one more frequently. You're just getting a direct, what is the required rate of return that stockholders want on this common stock. If you know the beta of the company, you just get the risk-free rate from T-bill yield tables. You get the expected return from the market from one of the services that puts that out there, and it's done for you. You don't have to do that. You just do that. The downside of this one is, what happens if the company doesn't have a beta? That can be an issue. A company is too new to have a beta. It's not traded publicly. It wouldn't have a beta. In a case like that, you can still get a beta by what's called the comps method, COMPS. What you do is you look at companies that do have betas that are similar in what they do to yours, comparable companies. And you get an average of their betas. And then you apply that to the beta for your company. Again, it's not that hard to do it. And then you got your beta and you just use that simple CAPM model and you've got the R sub S. Now, the one that is actually kind of popular now, the third method, is the equity premium. Method. This one seems to have a lot of traction these days. I kind of get it. Let me show you what the idea is. They are saying that the cost of retained earnings would be the cost of debt plus an equity premium. In other words, equity and debt are just two different sources of capital. If we know what the cost of debt is, then the cost of stock would just be some premium over that. Here's how the method is used in practice. a certain industry has an average cost of debt of 5.75%, and an average cost of equity of 15.32%. That would mean that for this industry, 15.232% equals the cost of debt, 5.75%, plus the industry's average equity premium. So if I work that out, subtract 5.75 from both sides, I would get an average equity premium for this industry. I should have it up there, calculator. 15.32% minus 5.75%. You get 9.57%. That was for the equity premium. That's for the industry. We have an overall equity premium of 5.75%. But now, our company has a cost of debt of 6.15%. The company might not have anything to do with as far as stock goes, but it certainly knows what its debt costs. That it's gone to the bank, that's what it's paying, or it's issued bonds, and that's what its yield to maturity is. So what we can do now and say, for our company, the cost of debt, the cost of equity is, and we can just use that equity premium, we can say our cost of equity is the cost of our debt, which is 6.15%, and then we add the equity premium of the industry, which is 9.57%. And we've got what we want, a cost of debt. We use our debt, cost of equity. We use the cost of our debt, and we use the industry's equity premium. And that gives us a final answer, 6.15%, did I say? 6.15, so plus 6.15, 15.72%. That's our cost of equity. Again, this is called the equity premium method. It's gotten popular these days. Essentially, all you're doing is you're just saying, let's find the equity premium for the industry. And then from there, we add our cost of debt and we get our cost of equity. There are actually a number of resources where you can find the equity premium for an industry. If I think about it, I'll show you one where you can just look down. Okay, we are in the consumer goods industry, and you can look right across. There's the equity premium of the industry, and then just add your cost of debt, and you've got your cost of equity. And again, this one's gotten popular. That's why there are all these services that are reporting it now, because it gets you a quick, dirty way to find your cost of equity. But you could also use CAPM. You could also use this method, the constant growth rate dividend method, to do it. Now, the spreadsheet that I've given you here uses that first model I gave you. And that's the one that I'll ask you on a quiz to use to get your cost of equity. But in any case, you can get these all. The last one is an oddball. Cost of new equity. Here, it's actually, all we do is, it's kind of like cheating. The cost of new equity. Your common shareholders, the price of the stock is, let's say, $50 a share. Now, I am an investment banker, and you come to me, you want to sell new common stock. And the first thing you tell me is, well, our stock is selling for $50 a share. So we know our cost of equity. I say, well, actually, no, because you're coming to me. I'm going to take what's called a flotation cost. You have to pay me some of that $50 to get me to sell this stock for you. So that float actually is what we use. We play it this way. The cost of new common stock is just going to be the cost of existing retained earnings, but divided by P0 minus the float. Because you're not going to get $50, you're going to get less. Notice how that minus F makes the cost of new equity higher than the cost of existing equity. So I could do one here, running out of board space fast here. Let me do it this way. I'll do one here. SBY common stock currently pays, well, let me just say just paid a $2.40 per share dividend that is expected to grow at a rate of 2.25% for the foreseeable future. The price of the stock is $58.45 per share. I'll let you get that caught up. Find the cost of retained earnings. That's the first thing we'll do. Not too hard. What we're going to do here is we're going to use the dividend growth model. R sub S will be D0, which is $2.40 times 1 plus 0.0225 over the price, 58.45. Pull up the stock thing here. We keep canceling that out. And so now we are going to do this. We are going to take the, what is it, $2.40 per share dividend times, open parenthesis, 1 plus 0.0225, close the parentheses, divided by 58.45 that's a pretty low cost of equity, 4.20%, about 4.20%. Okay, that's the first part. Now let's find the cost of new equity. The company will pay a flotation cost of 5% to issue new common stock. So let's see what the cost of their new common stock would be. So in a case like this, it would be $2.40 times 1 plus 0.0225 divided in this case by 58.45, and I'll do this as 1 minus 0.05. That'll is the same as if I could calculate 5% of 58. That's 58. I thought something looked wrong there. So I could just calculate 5%, take 58.45 minus 5% of it, but I'll just do it this way. It's faster. And if I do that, what I'll notice is, clear this out, I'm going to do the dividend, $2.40, 2.4 times 1 plus 0.0225, close the parenthesis. Now this is where it gets bad, is making sure you get all the parentheses in there. Divided by, open parenthesis, 54.80 times, open parenthesis, 1 minus 0.05, close the parenthesis, equals 4.71%. And this is where I fully appreciate how easy it is to make a mistake with the parentheses in this. I do it all the time myself. The lesson here, though, is notice that the cost of new common stock is more than the cost of retained earnings. That will always be the case. That's why one of the reasons we ask ourselves, why in the heck do companies keep issuing new common stock, raising capital through equity, selling stock? Because you've already got, common stock is already the most expensive source of capital. And then when you issue more of it, you're just eating an even greater cost. And the question is, what it possesses companies to keep issuing common stock? It's expensive to begin with. It's got the highest cost of the components of capital. And then when you issue more of it, that's even more expensive. When debt is so cheap, comparatively speaking, and preferred stock is cheap, comparatively speaking, what is the obsession with common stock? And there's an answer to that, but we'll get into that a little later. Now, the next thing I'm going to do, after you log into Attendance Radar, I'm going to mention the weighted average cost of capital. And don't worry, we'll do this again. I'll be hammering through this again on Wednesday. Make sure that you got this baked into your notes and all that. But here, while I'm erasing this mess that I've made on the board here, okay. The last piece of the journey for the day is, what are we trying to accomplish here? Here. This is all to the purpose of getting the weighted average cost of capital, the WACC. I should mention, by the way, that I would not give a WACC problem that had new equity in it. It would always be the debt, preferred, and existing retained earnings. But here is WACC. The weighted average cost of capital is the weight of debt in the company's capital structure times the after-tax cost of debt plus the weight of equity in the capital structure times the cost of equity. That's the WACC, weighted average cost of capital. Companies obsess with this simply because this is the underlying core cost of the company, of running the company. The cost up there, your cost of goods sold, your cost of salaries and wages, your cost of inventory, all of those, the cost of your lighting bills and shipping, all of them are underneath, are on top of this underlying cost that represents the cost of the business itself. Now, this one, we can point this out, that the weight of debt times the cost, the marginal cost, after-tax cost of debt, plus this one is actually the weight of retained earnings times the cost of retained earnings, plus the weight of preferred times the cost of preferred plus the weight of new stock times the cost of new stock. Now, I'm not going to have you do anything on that one. But that is the full-blown weighted average cost of capital. And on Wednesday, I will actually show you one of the published tables of weighted average costs of capital for, I think it's like 60 different industries. It is that important for companies to know it, that there is a table of these published, everything from aerospace to telecommunications, plastics, energy. So yeah, this is an important one in business. But I'll do that on Wednesday. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.